There is an experimental surgical approach using an implantable lens to prevent lazy eye or amblyopia in children. These particular children had either been diagnosed either too late or their lazy eye was too severe for standard treatment. I'm pleased to introduce Dr. Paul Dougherty, Medical Director of Dougherty Laser Vision, Clinical Instructor of Ophthalmology at the Jules Stein Eye Institute and UCLA School of Medicine. Good afternoon.
Thank you, Dr. Dworkin. It's great to be here.
And it's great to have you on the air, especially when we're looking at new ways to help improve, in this case, children's vision. And I want to ask you, can you describe the process or pathophysiology that leads to lazy eye or amblyopia in children?
Okay, well, actually, it's a fairly broad category and very common in children. Amblyopia means lazy eye, or the brain never developed the ability to see out of that eye. And there's a couple of main reasons this occurs. There's strabismic amblyopia. That means because the eyes are crossed and one of the eyes never gets visual information. And that's the most common cause of amblyopia. Second most common is what's called anisometropic, which means one eye has no prescription.
Mm-hmm.
The other eye has more prescription. And that can sometimes be corrected with glasses or contact lenses. And the last reason is due to some pathologic disorder of the eye, like a retinal or optic nerve lesion.
Now,
the most common is from crossed mm-hmm. eyes.
How many children are affected by this condition?
There's about 10% of kids will have some level of amblyopia or lazy eye. Crossed eyes is the most common reason.
Right.
But difference in power between the eyes is the second most common reason, and it's actually the type of amblyopia that we can treat with this implantable contact lens.
How is it commonly diagnosed?
Well, often with eyes being crossed, that's easily picked up by the
right.
parents, and the parents quickly bring the child in either to a pediatric ophthalmologist or the pediatrician. With difference in power between the eyes, that's often much more subtle, mainly because the child has one good eye and one bad eye, and he learns to adapt to using one eye. So typically, it's either school screenings or screenings in a pediatrician's office that recognize that one of the eyes doesn't see as well as the other. So if there's no screening done, this will often be missed.
What are the consequences if it is not diagnosed and remains untreated?
Well, again, what we're talking about is one eye having a high prescription and the other eye not having a high prescription. And essentially what will happen is the brain in that will shut down. The brain will not develop the ability to see. So if this is let go beyond age 9, the patient has permanent loss of vision that's not correctable, even if you were to correct the prescription in the eye or the refractive error.
Now, to date, what are the standard approaches that are used to treat it?
Well, for the specific problem that we're talking about, which is one eye being highly nearsighted and the other eye not having any nearsightedness, typically the first thing the pediatric ophthalmologist will try is a contact lens. Glasses are not an option because there's so much difference in power between the two eyes that the child won't be able to tolerate the glasses because the image is much smaller in the eye that's highly nearsighted.
Mm-hmm.
So really the only way to approach this is with a contact lens. The problem is less than 1% of the time does a contact lens actually work because the child frequently finds it irritating or pulls it out or just won't tolerate the contact
right.
lens.
So what led to the development of the experimental surgery for children?
Well, let's talk first of all, going back to the one eye amblyopia from one eye being highly nearsighted. Most of these cases, the child, because they couldn't tolerate a contact, there were no other options, and essentially the eye would just be left blind. Now, 5 or 10 years ago, people started using LASIK, which is a laser procedure to try and treat some of these eyes, and with some success. The problem with LASIK is that it can only safely treat a certain level of nearsightedness.
Okay.
And the other problem with LASIK is it requires the child's cooperation. So for very young children, it's not possible. Essentially, the implantable contact lens is called a Visian ICL, made by a company called Star Surgical in Monrovia, California. Essentially, this lens has been around since 1991, used in adults. And essentially, it's used early on. It was used primarily for people that had too high a level of nearsightedness for LASIK or laser vision correction. It's now currently used both for patients outside the range of LASIK as well as competing with patients that have that are good candidates for LASIK but just want a higher quality of vision. So it was primarily used for adults. So essentially what's happened is Because these children that have one eye that's highly nearsighted develop amblyopia with no other recourse, about 10 years ago in France, there were some doctors that started implanting these lenses in children as young as 3 years of age, with actually very good outcomes in terms of improved vision. Now, this lens, the Visian ICL, was just approved in the United States about 2 years ago, and there's not been as much experience with the ICL in the U.S. Prior to my operating on Megan a few weeks ago, there were two children under age 9 who had the implantable lens, but both these children were for a different reason. These two other children were done primarily, they were older, 7, 8 years of age. They had high nearsightedness in both eyes and for social reasons just couldn't or wouldn't wear their glasses.
Right.
So they had lenses implanted in both eyes with great success. Megan, who I operated on a couple weeks ago, is really the first child in North America to have this lens implant for specifically the reason of amblyopia combined with high nearsightedness. And essentially, we know that by age 3, the eye, in terms of the sizing in the front of the eye, is essentially close to adult size, and we know that we won't have to replace the lens ongoing.
Right.
So we went ahead and implanted the lens for Megan a couple weeks ago because there was really no other option for her.
How is the surgery performed? The lens does not replace her lens. It sits in front. Is that
correct. It's a technology called a phakic intraocular lens. And phakic means that she maintains her own lens, which is good because the natural lens, at least before younger than age 45, serves to zoom in and out to get vision distance and near. And essentially, the way the surgery is performed is we do it in the surgery center. In adults, I usually just do it under twilight, meaning the patient just gets a little bit of medication to help relax them, but they're awake and cooperating during the surgery.
Right.
For children, what we do is we usually use an anesthetic called ketamine and actually put them to sleep without intubating them. And so the child's cooperative. We use a lid separator to separate the eyelids so the child can't squeeze while we're implanting the lens. And we make a tiny little 3-millimeter incision in the side of the cornea, which is the clear window in front of the eye. After that, we inject a little bit of material called viscoelastic. It's like a little jelly in the front of the eye to expand the front of the eye. And then this lens is rolled up and inserted into the eye through an injector. The lens unfolds on top of the iris, which is the color part of the eye. And then I use a special instrument to place the lens under the iris and then to make medication to bring the iris down so that the eye looks completely normal. In fact, at conversational distance, no one could tell that anyone's ever had this surgery done.
Are there any post-operative therapies or care that has to happen?
Absolutely, and that's probably more critical than the surgery itself. Obviously, after surgery, the patient's on eye drops for a few weeks, but most importantly, as soon as we get that lens implant in the eye, we need to force the brain to start using the eye to combat the amblyopia. And the way we do that is by patching the fellow eye. We wait about a week, and then we basically penalize the good eye by either patching or using a substance called atropine that dilates and blurs the vision.
Right.
And that can go on, actually, for a number of years. By age 9, the brain has lost its elasticity, and it's really of no value. But up to age 9, the patients are aggressively patched or have atropine to penalize the eye to maintain vision or to increase vision.
Now, does the eye remain patched all the time, or is there a cycle of patching and then letting it open and then patching again?
Well, we start out really doing part-time patching because typically the child's very resistant because they've never used the eye that has poor vision, and then gradually increase to full-time patching during the day. Now, again, some pediatric ophthalmologists, and I'm an anterior segment surgeon, a refractive surgeon who specializes in these lens implants. I work closely with a pediatric ophthalmologist who's more geared to dealing with some of the issues with respect to patching. And essentially, part-time patching and full-time patching, and if the child won't cooperate, then we can use alternative things like atropine, which will penalize the eye that we're trying to patch without necessitating the child's cooperation.
Any specific advice or when you're counseling the parents about the surgery, is there anything the parents should be aware of with regards to potential complications of the surgery?
Well, we always talk about complications. This is a very low-risk procedure. Again, there's not been a lot of these done in the world in children. We know in adults there's about a 1% rate of cataract formation. That's a cloudy lens, cloudy natural lens behind the lens implant. We know the risk factors in adults is age over 40. And prescription more than minus 14.
Mm-hmm.
So because children are so resilient, I think it's highly unlikely these kids are going to develop cataracts. at a young age. There's also a potential of the pressure increasing the eye called glaucoma, usually a transient situation treatable with drops. So I certainly tell the parents that the child has a lot of pain or redness, get the child back immediately, but that's certainly not been an issue with the patient that we just treated. Again, the most critical part of this and the hard work really comes after the lens implant, which is patching the fellow eye to force the brain to develop vision in the good eye or in the bad eye.
Now, are you planning with this procedure to do clinical trials or at least accumulate data to show both the short and long-term effects of the surgery, looking at the success rates and how the children fared?
Absolutely. And Megan was really the first patient that we enrolled into the study, and we're actually in the process of sending out a letter to every pediatric ophthalmologist in North America, because I think most are not aware that there's any other options. Essentially, if the contact lens fails, they often just throw their hands up and say, there's not much more we can do for your child. So the first step is educating the pediatric ophthalmology community about this being a good option for these situations of amblyopia with high nearsightedness in one eye. And as we recruit patients, we're actually going to start enrolling patients in a clinical study and follow them long-term in terms of clinical outcomes.
Now, for our listeners, is there a website or phone number that they can use to get more information about this, about the study that you'll be doing, and if their children happen to have amblyopia where it may be to the point where they're told, well, it's too late to do anything, perhaps they may be able to call and find out about what is available to them?
Sure. Let's talk a little bit about this, because we've actually we had an AP news story that was throughout North America as well as on the CBS Early Show regarding this technology. And we've been getting a lot of people inquiring about their children from all over the U.S. and all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially, the majority of people that are inquiring about the lens are regarding children that really don't qualify. The most common reasons for people to have amblyopia is crossed eyes. I can't treat crossed eyes with this lens. The other common reason is patients who have difference in power, but they're farsighted, not nearsighted. Those patients also do not qualify. Essentially, it's patients who have one eye who's nearsighted and then the other eye that's not nearsighted.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, the child should have been screened by the pediatric ophthalmologist, and we prefer to have the information from the pediatric ophthalmologist.
Right.
But just the same, let me give you some websites to contact.
Okay.
My own website is DoughertyLaserVision.com, spelled D-O-U. GHERTYLASERVISION.com, and we certainly have. You can email us at our information site with the information, and we'll respond regarding whether it sounds like your child's a candidate. If your child is, we ask that you fax or send the information to us to review to make sure your child's a candidate. And after that, we certainly would be happy to evaluate the child. In fact, if it looks like the child's a good candidate for surgery after talking to the pediatric ophthalmologist, bring them down as kind of a one-stop treatment. We'll bring them in. We'll do the evaluation. We'll order the lens, and we can do the surgery at the same visit, because many of the people that are going to be contacting us are from out of town.
Right.
This is not it's not that common. Most pediatric ophthalmologists will see one or two patients like this a year who actually would benefit from the lens technology. The other thing I'll give you is the telephone number to our clinic, which is 323-466-7337, and where you can get more information about the lens. But the main issue is to make sure that, in fact, the child is a candidate for the procedure, and we can pretty quickly get down to that by making sure the child has no crossed eyes, number one, and number two, that they're nearsighted and not farsighted. That's information that's easily obtainable from the local ophthalmologist.
Dr. Paul Dougherty is Medical Director of Dougherty Laser Vision, Clinical Instructor of Ophthalmology at the Jules Stein Eye Institute and UCLA School of Medicine. And Dr. Dougherty, I'd like to thank you very much for providing this information. I think our listeners are going to be very interested, especially knowing how common this condition is, and perhaps take advantage of this if they find that they're presented with a situation, as you've mentioned, that it's their children have differences in the power of their eyes and it's not crossed eyes, and they're told that really there isn't much to do for them, that they can certainly get some information from your center and find out if there is indeed a way to help correct their children's vision.
Absolutely. The other critical point I want to make is the child, we can do this at any age, but beyond older than age 9, we're not going to help the amblyopia, we're only going to help the nearsighted. So the younger, the better.
Well, Dr. Dougherty, once again, thank you so much.
Dr. Dworkin, thank you so much.
You're listening to Dr. Barry Dworkin on Sunday House Call.